You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
It's Han Solo with you. So here's what we're doing, as we've done before. This is up to you now as the callers, the most important part of the show. This is the part of the show. This is our caffeine kick in right now. This is what we need to get us home, is we need help with the power hour. I set you up. That's what I do. That's my job. My job is not to deliver the power hour. So that'll be your job. Who is ready to bring it? So I will set you up, and then you don't say hi. Don't say anything. Just when I set you up, you deliver the goods. And I'll let you know if it was good or if it was bad. If you get the gong, well, you know what happened. That you did a good job. But if you don't, that's what it sounds like. So let's see. Tony in Somerset. It's hour number three. It's Bart and Han. What's that mean?
It's the power hour. Ow, 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 ow.
Nicely done, Tony. I like that. All right. Had the growl, a little grit to it. I like it. Eric in New Jersey. It's Bart and Han. It's hour number three. What's that mean?
It means it's the power hour, 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 hour.
I don't know, Eric. You got to, like, it's not only do you put that in your voice like that, but you also have to amplify the voice. If you're someone where you can't yell, that's a you problem. All right, let's see. Craig in Brooklyn. It's Bart and Han. It's hour number three. What's that mean?
It's the power hour, 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 hour.
All right, all right. Don't hour. Hurt yourself. Don't hurt yourself, Craig. Don't hurt yourself, Craig. I love it. All right, that was good. Good effort. Brad upstate. It's Bart and Han. It's hour number three. What's that mean?
Oh, Han, it means the Barstradamus simply says it's the power hour.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I said no Barstradamus. No Barstradamus. All right, one more. Amir from Charlotte. It's Bart and Han. It's hour number three. What's that mean?
It's the power hour, 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 hour.
I mean, you went, like, I get the, you tried to go with, like, the long distance effort. You tried to show me longevity. So I appreciate that effort, but you understand, it's one thing to last a long time, but you got to bring it. I don't know if that was really exactly what we were looking for. You know what? I think we got a couple of good ones. Did we get two gongs out of that? I think we got two gongs out of it. All right, we got two gongs. So you did well. You did well, everybody. We have tomorrow to do it again. So all of you, again, just rest up your voices. Get them ready. Practice if you need to. Go outside. Yell it a few times. Try it out with your friends. See if it's good or it's bad. You understand what we're looking for. It's a lot to try to keep up with a guy like Bart Scott. It's not easy to keep up with Bart Scott. So we'll do it again tomorrow. But in the meantime, let's get into more conversations. I've talked with you about this today. There's a great article on ESPN.com right now. Sam Bord is a terrific writer. One of our senior writers at ESPN did this profile on Aaron Judge. And it's the year after now, 62, you know, the MVP, the best player in the sport. He was the face of the sport for so long. Everything he did. And it's like, all right, how do you follow this up? You got paid now. How do you follow this up? And if you read the story, as I've said many times, and Sam, we welcome you and thanks so much for joining us. Sam, what I said after reading this is I said, this gives me even more faith that who I thought Aaron Judge was, he is. Tell me a little bit about, like, what we've learned about, what you learned about Aaron Judge in this profile.
Yeah, what's up, Alan? Thanks for having me, man. Nice to talk with you.
Likewise.
You know, it's funny. Like, I came to this story as somebody who has not followed the Yankees all that closely. You know, I mean, I you and I both remember. I mean, mm-hmm. I was covering them for the Daily News back in the, you know, mid-2000s, but have not been around the Yankees very much in the last few years. And so all I knew about Judge was kind of what he did last year. You know, obviously I followed the home run chase like everybody did, but I was really interested in how you follow up like the greatest moment of your life, the greatest season of your life. Like, that's a really hard thing and a really hard concept, I think, for, you know, an athlete to confront. And I was really impressed, I have to say, I hope it came through in the piece, but I was really impressed by the very like cerebral and intellectual approach that he was taking to it. You know, we talked a whole lot about, you know, when you get to a certain level, you're not going to have 10, 20% improvement. You know, it's unlikely he's going to hit 15 more homers this year. You know, he's looking for 1 and 2% improvements in every aspect of his life and hoping that adds up to the difference, you know, the difference in winning a World Series. And I just thought that was a really intellectual and thoughtful way to go about it. And he came across as a really thoughtful, intellectual guy, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, and you asking me, Sam, and I'll tell you, you know, we've known each other a long time. Like, I'll be honest with you, like, it absolutely came through. In fact, I'll show you this. As I'm reading it, I was copy-pasting some quotes, some things that he said, some things that you were also explaining to my son, who's a hockey player, and just mental things. I said, read this, like, understand this. Like, look what Aaron Judge at his level is still thinking, what he needs to do. Like, so you keep this in mind now as you go into your offseason. Like, that's why I found this to be, like, in so many levels, a fascinating profile. But you also brought up the idea, and obviously it is in this article, is Aaron Judge talking about what's it going to take to win a championship? The simple things, the little details that are the difference from winning a championship. Do you get the sense, and I get it from reading this, but you were around and you spent that time. Do you get the sense that that is primarily on his mind because he's aware that as a Yankee, you're judged, of course, on the things you do during regular season. And again, he's going to be now in the Jeter conversation. But knowing that really what matters is what you do in October and beyond when you're a Yankee, does he have that on his mind, knowing, like, I won't be truly great as a Yankee until I accomplish something in the postseason, including winning a World Series?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And I think that obviously is sort of like an ethos that exists within the organization and in large part because of people like Jeter. But, I, you know, the other thing that I think is interesting in terms of driving him in that direction, obviously it's about legacy. It's about it. This is what you dream of. You dream of winning a World Series. But to be honest with you, Alan, I think that a big part of it, too, is his connection to his teammates, you know. And I think that his investment in their happiness, you know, their feeling of togetherness, their feeling of him as, you know, not apart from them, but maybe a leader of them, but with them. I think that's as big a part of driving him towards the team result as anything else. I don't know that it's necessarily specifically about this is my individual Aaron Judge legacy. It's about the way he feels about the group as a whole, mm-hmm. and knowing that in the end last year, it was a disappointment. Whatever it was for him individually, it was a disappointment for the team as a whole and wanting to change that. And I think, you know, you know this as well as anybody. You've been around lots of different sports as well as I. You know, there are lots of star players who have lots of nice things said about them by other players on their team. But there is a difference between saying something nice about a guy who's your star and actually believing and caring about how that person sees you and sees the team. And I don't think there was any question that the Yankees in that clubhouse see Judge not only as their star, but also as a guy who is a part of their group. And I think that means quite a bit to him in terms of how he looks at what he's trying to do this season.
And by the way, that also comes through very clearly in this as well. And you gave several examples of them. We're talking with Sam Borden. He's one of our great writers here at ESPN, senior writer. And the headline is Aaron Judge doesn't think last season was his best. Could this be the one? And when you talk about the teammate thing, that it really isn't about him. And we've seen that. Like you said, you see athletes and they can come off as, you know, not so self-aggrandizing, that they are more humble and there's a lot of humility with them, but there's always that ego that drives them. So before I even get into the part of the story, like with the conversation with Cabrera, which I thought was fascinating, the art of war and all that. Like, again, it's such a fascinating article. But before we get into what his teammates think of him, the things that he's done, examples, holding the bullpen, not the bullpen, but the batting cage gate open, everybody else going first, I'll go in last, how he doesn't always go to premier cages, that he doesn't treat, he doesn't carry himself like I'm elite, I'm above everybody else. But it's again, it's more about his mindset of winning a championship and why that part is so important. And mindset is, of course, the mental aspect of the game. I found it interesting that he would admit to you, that he would admit publicly that he does have fear and that he has to overcome that. And by doing it, he has to use, you know, like the mental coaches the mental coach he deals with, and to watch videos of himself doing things successfully as the last image he sees before he goes out on the field. That stuff to me is fascinating, that somebody of his level would reveal something like that about himself.
Yeah, I think it's great, honestly. I mean, I agree with you. And when we were talking about it, this is what I was trying to say, I guess, at the beginning, is that I found him incredibly earnest, you know what I mean? Which is remarkable when you think about the things that he's accomplished. But I also found it really inspiring and invigorating because, you know, there are, I think the one thing that we've all learned about mental health, you know, as this, you know, this country, our society has sort of reckoned with it on a greater level over the last however many years, is that there are lots of different paths to success. You know what I mean? There isn't one definite way that you are going to get from here to there. And so I think it's terrific. You know, you look at a guy who is the size he is, has the muscles he has, the capability that he has from a physical standpoint, and you would assume, okay, well, this is a guy who just, you know, gets there because he goes into the cage and takes advantage of those physical gifts. And I think that it was really, I found it really heartening, not only for him to admit that, no, this takes work on a different level, and here are the things that I do, and I'm still learning. I mean, you know, we were talking about different books, and I threw a name of a different book at him, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, that's on my wife's nightstand, you know, like, I gotta make sure I steal that one. Like, he's open to it, you know, like, he has the idea in his mind, not only that this is what I need to do to succeed, but also there are lots of things I don't know that I need to do to succeed. And I just think that's really, I think that's really inspiring and really heartening for people, whether it's your son, whether it's me, you know, looking at and trying to figure out how I'm going to do my next assignment or my next story, or talking to my kids. Like, there's no defined path from, you know, here to there. And he is showing that this is the path that he's found that works for him. And, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to try a couple of different things and see what works for you. And I think that's a really positive message.
And Sam, don't you find it also to be incredibly relatable for somebody who physically and now financially is not relatable at all? Like, there's nothing.
Totally.
Right? Like, there's nothing relatable about Aaron Judge to the rest of us. Nothing at this point. Physically, financially, where he is, of course, as a star, all those things. Like, you can't relate to his life at all. But yet, I read this. And I read again that there's a vulnerability about him, and also the drive of, you know, I want to be great. You know, the conversation, again, I keep telling your own story, so I should just let you do it. But okay. I'll just say, like, you open this profile with him January, a week after signing the contract. A week, by the way, after a life-changing, like, if I'm signing for $300 million, if I win the lottery and get $300 million, which I think is what the lottery is right now, you won't see me for a month. Like, I don't need to be there until March, right? He's there a week later in Tampa. And just tell everybody, like, that first interaction he has, I think DJ LeMahieu was there, and one of the hitting coaches were there. And I found that to be the most remarkable thing.
No, it was, and it's funny, I was talking to the hitting coach, Dylan Lawson, and he's, you know, whatever, we're talking about a bunch of different things. Tell me about, you know, how he hits these home runs. Like, I'm just, you know, asking for sort of some context on why he's so good. And he tells me this story about literally, you know, a week or so after the contract, Lawson's in there working with DJ LeMahieu, who was recovering from an injury, and Judge comes in, and Lawson says, you know, they're, hey, congratulations, you know, they're, you know, talking about his new deal, way to go, whatever. And then, you know, okay, let's get to work. And he says, you know, Judge says to Lawson, what do you got for me? Like, which is sort of like the shorthand for, like, you looked at my film, you know, what do I need to work on? What's something that I need to work on? And Lawson says, you know, to me, when we're having this conversation, I laugh because it's like, this is a guy who just broke the home run record, signed a new deal. And he's saying to me, like, what do I need to work on? He was like, I thought he was like a joke, you know? And so he says back to Judge, like, what, like, you don't want to just run that one back, you know, from last year? You want to just do that again? And he said that Judge looked at him, like, kind of gave him sort of like a courtesy laugh, and then was like, no, you know, and said, like, there's got to be more. And I just think, like, to me, again, there are lots of stories about guys who, you know, first guy to open the gym in the morning and last guy out at night. And, you know, working hard is not a unique thing to Aaron Judge. But I just think when you put that context of, like you just said, just signed this life-changing deal, just in there, you know, 7 weeks till spring training, an opportunity certainly to have a casual, you know, knock the dust off your swing session. And he's saying there's got to be more. That is indicative of a guy who has his mind in a certain place. And I use that story to begin the story because I thought it was evocative of the way he's approaching this entire year.
Yeah, I loved it as a setup because it now made me think, okay, this is the guy I thought he was. I'm seeing it already. He's not going to rest on his laurels, as they say. He's not going to just settle in and think, all right, I had my great year. This is good. Now I can just play ball and not worry about it. Why would I need to? You know, you always get that thing. Why would I need to change anything? Right? Why am I changing anything? And instead, he's like, no, I want to keep getting better. There's more I can do. So there's that part of it. And then there's, as I mentioned before, the teammate relationship thing. And it's how he carries himself. Like, look, leadership is many different ways. Sometimes you're a leader because you're just the best player on the team and you're considered a leader, even if you don't have leadership qualities about you. Then there are some people, and I love the Willie Randolph thing. I was a captain before I was named captain. You could say the same thing about Aaron Judge. So in this case, like, give me examples from this story that you found so compelling, and maybe one that might not have made it, maybe something that got edited out, of about what teammates feel about him that you know you felt like was just genuine enough to use in a story.
Yeah, no, it was really, it's to your point earlier, honestly, Alan, about, you know, there are ways to be a leader, and one of them, like you said, is to be amazing, and one of them is to sort of be a general or whatever. But Judge's leadership style is one of relatability. You know, you were just saying it about, you know, you and I relating to him. But there are guys in that clubhouse, I mean, you know, Oswaldo Cabrera, that's hard for him to relate to Aaron Judge. You know what I mean? There's plenty of guys on that team. Most of the guys on that team feel like they can't necessarily relate to a guy like Aaron Judge who has that success, has that money, has that stature. And so I think the thing that I found from all of the stories that I heard about him, and I used the vast majority of them in the story, were that this is a guy who wants to be one of them, who wants to be felt as though he is relatable. And so that's why, like, I found it interesting that, you know, he was willing to hit in cage number four that doesn't have HD TVs and doesn't have, you know, the brand new pitching machine. He's willing to go in there with, you know, a prospect and talk to them about hitting. He's willing to talk about books with, you know, a young kid who's, you know, a second year on the big league team. He's willing to fail in the mini golf, you know. He's willing to fail and be bad and not be mad about it and be bouncing around on that day and caring more about how the other teams are doing as opposed to the fact that his team is terrible because he's terrible, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, all of that. Then, you know, I talk to the clubhouse attendants and the staffers, and they say, from when he was a rookie until now, before he had this contract, even when he was a rookie, going in the back and thanking the chefs who come in and cook for them after every single game. You know, I mean, I wish my kids would have that kind of gratitude, you know, when we go out to dinner. You know what I'm saying?
Like, but that's,
these are just,
you're right. Those are,
say, these are just real things.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're just real human things. And so I think showing a gratitude for your position in life, whatever it is, whether it's a Major League Baseball player or a radio host or a senior writer at ESPN, I feel that gratitude. And it's, I think, relatable that he feels that gratitude. And I think that his teammates gravitate to that sort of relatability. And so, you know, when we talk about how do you lead, I think he leads by being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great example. Now, again, you were around the team when Derek Jeter was still on it. Is that as close to, you know, Jeterian, you know, as they would say, as you've seen? Like, is that the same qualities, or is there a difference in them? Are we making too much of that comparison?
I, I think it's a little, I'm not saying it's too much because I think it's inevitable, you know, for that comparison to be made, but they're very different. I mean, in my opinion, and now that I've spent so much time with Judge, obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, I was a beat writer with the Yankees for several years when Jeter was on the team. So I feel like I, you know, knew yep. quite a bit about him. But to your point earlier, Alan, Jeter was never vulnerable. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
He never was. You know, that was a thing for him. You know, he was very stiff upper lip all the time. And I think, you know, his thing was, I'm going to make this big spotlight feel small by not acknowledging that it's there. You know what I mean? By okay. just saying, this is another game. This is a, you know, another injury. This is another series. That it was always just, you know, we're going to go play baseball. That was his thing. And that's fine. And it worked for him, obviously. Judge, there is a vulnerability. There is a, you know, an openness to him, I think, whether it's, you know, perpetual, whether it continues for the rest of his career, I don't know. But at this moment, I felt a certain vulnerability from him that I don't think I ever felt from, you know, conversations that I had with Jeter. And I certainly knew Jeter longer than I did Aaron
yeah.
Judge.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. It's why I asked it, because, again, you would have that ability. You know that difference than the rest of us who, you know, might not have that same perspective. Now, the last thing I'll leave with you, because it's the way you ended the story, and I kind of love this part of it too, is him saying to you how I'm sitting here with you, like I'm smiling, I'm Aaron, right? There's that yeah. alter ego that he's learning about, that step on the field, I'm someone else. And a lot of the greats are like that in all the different sports. I mean, there's some guys in the NFL, absolute killers on the gridiron. Off it, nicest guys in the world. And you ask yourself, like, how are you possibly this cool? Like Bart Scott, my co-host. Bart is one of the, like, I'm telling you right now, one of my favorite people in the world that I can talk to, I can kick it with, I can call him any time of the day, that he laughs easy, you can make fun of him, all that stuff. But I then remember watching a player who was an absolute yeah. beast on the field, who only wanted to destroy you any way possible. And I always wonder, like, how do you flip that switch? And is that something that Judge has or is still working on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed most about talking with him was hearing about that sort of mental approach. And he was very candid. He, you know, he pointed to Kobe Bryant and said that Kobe Bryant is somebody that the Yankees mental coach will sometimes put images of him in those videos you were talking about that he watches before he runs out onto the field. And frankly, he was in awe of the way Kobe Bryant had the Black Mamba mentality mm-hmm. and was able to flip that switch. And so I said, look, you know, like, obviously this is something you're working on. Like, do you have that? Do you have an alter ego? Do you have, you know, like in your mind, something that you're, you know, shooting for? And I, you know, he was very, again, you know, can you imagine Jeter saying this? Like, no, he said, you know, no, it's something I don't have.
Right.
But he said, give me time, you know, give me time. Like, this is something I want. This is something that I'm trying to accomplish. I would love to get to that level, whether I get there or not. The process is the important thing. I'm trying to get there. Give me time. And I think when he thinks about the possibility for this year or the year after or the year after that, in terms of improving on what he did last year, those are the kinds of things he thinks about, not 60, you know, 71 home runs,
right.
81 home runs. I think he thinks about, I want to be more like Kobe Bryant.
Tremendous. Sam, it's fantastic. Again, Aaron Judge doesn't think last season was his best. Could this be the one? A must read on ESPN.com right now, authored by Sam Borden. Sam, always good to catch up with you. Thanks so much, and great job on this. Wonderful.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate talking with you, too.
You got it. All right, again, you got to see it. You got to read it. I'll put the link up on my Twitter if you haven't yet, but it's a must read. If you're a Yankees fan, if you're a sports fan, if you're an athlete, it's a mindset thing. Mindset's everything, especially in today's sports. There's way more of that going on than ever before. And when you see a guy like him with all the success that he's had, and he still, every day, needs that affirmation, well, it tells you all you need to know about his drive to continue to be better. How do you improve on the best season of your career? That's what he's working on right now.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
So all of you that are victims of the Long Island Railroad, you know, schedule change, and, you know, again, we appreciate that they added this Grand Central Station line and all that stuff's nice. Put all that money into it. I get it. But, man, like, we were just debating, like, for me to go home now from Penn, because it doesn't – for where we are location-wise, we're on the west side. We're just not Grand Central doesn't. It's not convenient to where what we're doing. Those of us who live on Long Island or Queens, and work here, so it's always Penn Station. So there's now, because of the different change schedules, and you'll look at me like, why do I care about this, Alan? Because maybe some of you can relate. So I get, I have a direct train that I could catch in Penn Station. That's 3:09. We get off the air. What time, Ray? It's about like what? It's 56.
Somewhere in that range,
right,
yeah.
Right. 2:56. We're off the air. We hand it off to the K Show. There's no chance that I could sign off, run out the building, catch a subway down to Penn in time for the 3:09. No chance. So after that, it's all other trains and get off, which we're all doing. We're all doing the same Jamaica dance now. Down to Jamaica. We all get off the platform and wait for our other trains that go out to our different locations. This is frustrating. So we were just trying to, like, strategize. Like, how would we do it? The answer is there's no way to do it. End of that. 800-919-3776. We'll get to your calls momentarily. Our good friend Kendrick Perkins was on the Road Tripping Pod, and he brought up something that I've been trying to, like, hint everybody about. He said of Jaylen Brown, as the Celtics are heading into the playoffs, he's giving me all the signs that he wants out of Boston. That's what Perk said. And I'm telling you, Knicks and Nets, by the way. Knicks and Nets. That's a story to watch, everybody. That's a story to watch. Now, meanwhile, speaking of Boston, Kevin Garnett, KG, had his podcast going. He had Paul Pierce on, and they were kicking around some stuff as well. And I briefly mentioned this last week, but I want to bring it back here. Is KG brought up Damian Lillard. As remember, KG is the, if anybody, is the billboard for stayed too long because he wanted to be loyal to the franchise that drafted him, it's KG. He did that with Minnesota for a very long time. Now look, when he got to Minnesota, he turned them into a contender. They went to the conference finals one year. They were great. It was first him and Wally Szczerbiak, my good friend. Then it was him and Steph Marbury and others. Like, they had really good teams there. Flip Saunders was the coach. And then it just kind of faded away. Flip left, and then it just, they weren't the same. They didn't make the playoffs anymore. They were poorly drafted. Weren't a destination. Free agents didn't want to go there. And he was now stuck in a place that they just were never going to win. And everybody said, you got to ask for a trade. You got to leave. You got to leave. And he just wouldn't do it. Until Kevin McHale, who was the GM, said, KG, you got to go. Like, it's time. And then he ended up famously trading him for basically nothing to the Celtics, and the rest is history. KG won a championship, and it paid off perfectly. So now Garnett sees Dame Lillard in Portland, and he's seeing his own story playing out. So he believes if it's time, there's only one place for him to go.
If Dame Lillard gets to New York, does what he does in Portland in New York, he'll be considered one of the best to ever do it. Like, already. If he had 71 in the garden like he did in the Rose Garden, come on, man, we'd be sitting up, it'd be bigger than life, Lord. That's what I'm saying. Ooh.
What if they can get up quickly and some picks?
Hell no. And, you can keep the core, bro.
If you keep the core and get him, you got to give up Barrett. You got to give up Barrett and quickly.
Damn. I love quickly too, dog.
You gotta give Bones. Up something.
Quickly and Bones are my favorite two young guys in the league, and Tyrese Maxey. I love watching them play.
No, I'm a big fan of Emmanuel Quickly as well. Now, that was Paul Pierce who was chiming in on what you'd have to give up, because we all know it'd be very expensive trade wise to try to acquire Damian Lillard. But while this is continuing to go in the social media cycle, I hate to do this because everybody knows how many years now have I been singing this song. Right? Like, I've been singing this song forever. I think it's passed. I think that ship has sailed. I hate to say it. That ship has sailed. Lillard to the Knicks is no longer a reality. And why is that? It's not because they don't have the assets to trade him. It's not because they don't want to trade him. It's not because that Lillard, if he ever did ask out, or if Portland went to him and said, listen, before you get too old, while you still have a lot of value, we need to reset, and we're going to use you as an asset. Like, that could happen too. Why I believe the window is closed is that you have Jalen Brunson. Now, tell me, with Jalen Brunson, and he has done this year, he should be the most improved player in the NBA this year. Look at his numbers. Look what he's done. He had 48 on Friday against the Cavs. Jalen Brunson is your starting point guard of the present and the future. That's what you got. You finally got one, and he's it. Now, you can say, well, why don't you play them together? You're going to put two guys 6'1", ball dominant. Two guys 6'1", ball dominant in the same backcourt. You think that's a good idea? It's not a good idea. You also, as you heard those guys say, you're going to have to give up a lot. Draft picks. Probably have to give up some players because you got to match the money. Lillard makes like almost $50 million a year. So you got to make up the money as well. There's so many things here that just tell you the ship has sailed. It ain't coming back to port. And unless you are somebody that is as heartless as I would trade, you know, somebody, not me, I would never, ever do this. No chance. That you would trade Jalen Brunson for him. No way would you do that. You just wouldn't. Guy in his late 20s, 28, 27, Brunson, for a guy who's in his mid-30s? No way are you doing that. But then playing them together doesn't make sense either. For many levels, many reasons. They're both the same size. They're both guys scoring guards, ball dominant. Could be a good show, but defensively, I just don't see it, guys. So while this has been a fun conversation to have over the last couple of years, I don't believe it's ever going to come to pass anymore. It's sad because there was a time, but that time is gone. Now, interesting here, Tim McMahon, who covers the Mavericks for us at ESPN, just put up a tweet talking to Luka Doncic because the Mavs have been a mess. And Luka talking about, you know, not being able to remember last season, they were a Western Conference Finals team. They went, they blew the doors off the Suns in Game 7 and then took on the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And so they were, looked like the Mavs were on their way and Doncic and whatnot. And Luka was, you know, just kind of lamenting the fact that they have just not been able to recreate what they had last season, the chemistry they had as a team. And so McMahon asked the question, how much have you missed Jalen Brunson? And his reply was a lot. And he said, amazing guy, amazing player for sure. Misses Jalen Brunson, does he? Not happy with Kyrie Irving. That has not really fit, right? And now you're hearing that the Mavericks really want to re-sign Kyrie. But some people think they just need more time together. Listen, everybody, root for that. Root for that. Yeah, give it more time. Go ahead, Dallas. Lock yourself in with Kyrie Irving. Watch what happens. And you want to talk about a player? that you want to be available for? Luka Doncic. Because you already know how he feels about Jalen Brunson, right? Just saying. Jaylen Brown, Luka Doncic, but the Dame Lillard stuff, unfortunately, I believe that's in the past. Dante in Queens. Dante.
Hey.
What's up?
Hey, what's up, Al? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Real quick, I'm a Damon Lillard point and Jaylen Brown, but I agree with your take on Lillard because as I was just telling another guy, you know, at your station that, you know, screened the calls, like, basketball is a young man's game. So if you're the Knicks, your timeline for a star needs to be between, like, 24 to 30. Lillard is turning, what, like 33 this year or something like that?
Yep. Yeah, he's way north of 30 now, and he's still having probably the best season of his career. He's averaging over 32 a game. Like, he's having a great career year. But as I said, the fit, Dante, it's the fit. When you have Jalen Brunson, you have now moved on. That's it. You have moved on. Arsenio in the car. Arsenio.
How are you, Han?
What's up?
So with the Lillard, I also agree with what you're saying. Like, it's just unfortunate that the timing and, you know, the way the roster is constructed now, like, it just probably wouldn't make any sense. But now when it comes to Luka, it's hard to say that it, like, obviously him and Brunson having the relationship and, you know, the chemistry that they've had together and playing together makes sense. But I just don't see Luka meshing with Tibbs and the type of defense and how he plays on defense. That would probably be a problem.
No. Here's why I tell you I disagree with that, Arsenio. And we got to run, so I appreciate the call. He played for Rick Carlisle. I mean, I think he, like, again, the European players can be coached. Those guys want to be coached. Like, it's not, you know, I mean, some of the American players don't want to be coached. They don't want to be told what to do. European players are pretty open to being coached, especially if they trust what you're saying. It's when they don't trust what you're saying that you got a problem. I wouldn't worry about any of that stuff. Now, look, this is way down the road. This is not something I would say watch this offseason. Jaylen Brown, you watch this offseason. And as I've said many times, if you're the Knicks and you find out that he's definitely going to leave, you move hell or high water to get him. Because somebody else will, and it could be the Nets.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
I love this. This guy, Tom, sent me a tweet with Luka as a kid wearing a Carmelo Anthony Knicks t-shirt. Let it begin. Just let it begin. I can do it. Yeah, we should talk about my Islanders. I mean, Ray, the Islanders right now, we are like hanging on by a thread now, right? Because the Penguins won a couple, the Panthers won.
Yeah, and the next game being against the Lightning isn't great. But,
because the Lightning just, yeah.
But the last three, I have faith they can get three out of these last four.
All right, let's get it done. All right, so the Islanders, again, this is their 50th anniversary season, and we continue with celebrations and giveaways all season long at UBS Arena. ESPN New York wants to make you part of this historic season. Enter to win two free tickets to see the Islanders face off against the Montreal Canadiens at home on April 12th. That one of them you're pretty confident in. Just download the ESPN New York app, scroll down to contests, and submit your entry. For full contest rules, go to ESPNNewYork.com. Be sure to visit NewYorkIslanders.com for team news, tickets, and more, and catch every Islanders game live on the Islanders stream, heard only on the ESPN New York app. All right, all this stuff with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and just the trash talking, all that. Caitlin Clark, I feel like this is it. This is the end of the conversation. So she's on Outside the Lines, and she talked about how Angel Reese is getting all this criticism for the things that she did and said at the end of their championship game at LSU. And Caitlin Clark said she should not be criticized.
I don't think Angel should be criticized at all. No matter which way it goes, she should never be criticized for what she did. You know, I'm just one that competes and she competed. So I think everybody knew there was going to be a little trash talk in the entire tournament. It's not just me and Angel. So I don't think she should be criticized. Like I said, LSU deserves it. They played so well. And like I said, I'm a big fan of hers.
And I mean, it said all the right things on OTL. She is the Wooden Award winner for this year. So let's just talk a little more, because more conversation was, it's like, you know, the women playing basketball and they're trash talking, and it's not the right thing to do. I mean, they should just play basketball, and it's not right. Well, you know what? Caitlin Clark said, why can't we talk trash?
I think men have always had trash talk. You know, that's what it's been. And I think more and more people, as they turn on the game, they're appreciating it for what it is. I'm just lucky enough that I get to play this game and have emotion and wear it on my sleeves. And so does everybody else. So that should never be torn down. That should never, you know, be criticized, because I believe that's what makes this game so fun. That's what draws people to this game. That's what draws it to the pro level, to the college level, to the high school level. So either way, it doesn't matter. You know, you should be able to play with that emotion. That's what makes it so fun. Nobody wants to tune in and not see people, you know, be competitive and passionate about what they're doing across any sport. That's how it should be. So I believe that's, you know, what it should be. And that's how I'm going to continue to play. That's how every girl should continue to play. So I'm just lucky enough that, you know, we have fans support us and, you know, want to watch that type of basketball.
Yes. And thank you, Caitlin. And thank you, Angel. Thank you. Show that passion. Show that competitive fire. You put all that work in to win a national championship, to play at that level. Let it all out. Let them hear it. Don't hold back. K-Show next. See you all tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.